Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Tech Doctor Podcast. With me, as always, is the doctor himself, Dr. Robert Carter. How are you, Robert?
I'm good.
We are so happy to be joined today by someone who is certainly no stranger to anyone who follows the blindness technology world, Mr. Steve Sossen. Steve, welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
I am great. Thanks for being brave enough to have me today.
We're pretty adventurous here on the Tech Doctor Podcast, so thank you for coming on.
We've been toying for a while with the topic of Android on this podcast and did a three-part series on the Nexus 7. And I know, Steve, that you are and have been for many years an Apple Mac user. In fact, you were one of the people, one of the go-to people for me when I got my Mac back in 2008, because you've been using the Apple technology for a long time. So, but I also know that you've had experience in recent years with Android, and we thought maybe that we could just have a roundtable discussion today about Android and your experience with switching back and forth from Android to iOS. And I guess all three of us really have been doing that in one way or another, me with the Nexus 7, and I don't know what devices you've been using, Steve, but we just thought it would be interesting maybe to talk about where things are at with this interchange between Android and iOS at this point. Would that be okay with you?
Absolutely.
Before we get into some of those details, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what you've been doing with Android and what your experience has been.
As you mentioned, I've been an Apple person for a long time. And prior to my current position, used to be an assistive technology instructor in the state of Maine. And so I would run into people all the time who would want to get some sort of mobile device, and they just didn't want the iPhone. The iPhone was too expensive, or it came with a data plan that people didn't want, or it only worked with AT&T, which people in Maine, where coverage at that time was very spotty, didn't necessarily want. A lot of reasons went into it, but people just wanted an alternative, and I didn't really have one. The only phones I knew of at that time were the iPhone and, of course, the older Symbian phones, which were out, but also had restrictions on which carriers they would work with. So when I started hearing about Android accessibility, I really got fired up about it. I was excited because I thought, finally, we have an alternative. And as much as iOS is just fine for me and I love the iPhone, I wanted to see what it was all about and find out if maybe it would be a good viable alternative for folks who, you know, needed it. And so I decided the best way to do it. There was a day when my wife foolishly left me alone by myself. I'm just going to go down to T-Mobile and see what they have. And when I went there, I discovered another neat thing about some of the Android phones of the day, and that was I discovered the T-Mobile G2, which had a physical keyboard. Now, as much as I love my iOS device, and always have, I hate typing on it. I just can't stand it. And I do a lot of typing. I do a lot of texting and emailing and scheduling and everything else. And when I saw that this Android device had a keyboard, I was immediately in love. And I thought, you know, I will totally give up Foursquare accessibility or whatever else I might need to if I could just type things out. This is fantastic. So I got the Android and signed a contract, realized then I probably shouldn't have rushed into it, but who cared? Ran back home and started sort of playing around with Android and figuring out what applications worked. And at that time, accessibility isn't where it is now. It was a lot more rudimentary, but it was there. A lot of apps that were out did not work. A lot of developers were not real familiar with the accessibility that existed. And so I found that for doing what I needed to do, sort of the basic things, calling, texting, tweeting, very important, email, I could do all of those things with my Android device. The challenge was I needed to find applications that let me do it. It wasn't as easy as using the iPhone, where just out of the box things would work, but it was doable if I found an email program that was accessible, and if I found a Twitter program that was accessible. So a lot of sort of geeky research went into it. What eventually happened was that Siri came out on iOS, and it really gave me pause. Number one, because I thought Siri was just a cool concept. I mean, who doesn't want to have their phone tell them a knock-knock joke or something?
Exactly.
And the other thing, though, is it really made me look at, you know, I could do all these things on my Android device, but can I do them well? Is it taking me longer to write that email than it does to, you know, than it does on iOS? Can I edit what I'm really writing? Can I read character by character? One of the things that was really problematic at the time was you couldn't make TalkBack spell text messages and things like that. So if someone says, give me a call, my phone number is blah, 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 you had to memorize it or repeat the message. And I thought, this is getting to be a pain when at work more and more people are texting me things and that sort of stuff. And as I mentioned, Siri was cool. And so I switched back to the iPhone, threw my G2 in the drawer, and didn't really look back until this past year when Jelly Bean had come out, and I realized there was all kinds of accessibility enhancements in Android, and that now a lot of these touchscreen phones would work with it. That didn't work before either. And so, although I love the physical keyboard, I was excited about the fact that more and more devices were working with accessibility, and, you know, again, they work cross-carrier. I know there's iPhones now on just about every carrier, but still, I like options. And so I thought, you know, I really need to look into this Android thing more. And so again, I went this time to the AT&T store where I was eligible for an upgrade, and I purchased the Samsung Galaxy S3.
So had your wife left you alone again?
She did, ironically enough.
Oh, man.
She did, yeah.
She's got there to stop doing that.
You know, that's exactly what she said, too, when she came back. And she said, what did you get? And I said, well, I went by AT&T. And she said, oh, boy, which phone did you get this time? And I said, well, it's the Galaxy S3. And she's like, that's an Android thing, isn't it? And I said, well, yes. And at that point, she said, yes, I shouldn't leave you alone at all.
I heard an unboxing that you did when you got the Galaxy S3, and it sounded like you were able to get it going pretty well out of the box, but as I recall, you did need some sighted help with it.
Yeah.
I did, and that was a little bit disappointing, but the fact that I could get it going at all out of the box was really encouraging, because I couldn't do that before. And so right from day one, I saw that there was a big difference in you know, the way that accessibility was integrated into it, specifically into the S3, into other devices. That's one of the things that changed. And so that was real exciting. What I found was, though, with the S3, yes, the touchscreen was now accessible. Yes, a lot more apps work with TalkBack. The web browser, for example, which didn't work before, now works. And I was really excited about that. There's a lot of enhancements and improvements to accessibility, but after a couple of months, I still have my S3. I still do use it. But I found myself in many ways in the same situation I was. That being that for me, I couldn't do things as well on the Android device as I could on iOS. I could do them, but I couldn't do them as fast or as well. The exciting thing, though, for me is that if you don't need to do them as fast or as well, it might make it a great option. And what I mean by that is I use my phone a lot of times for work, so I've got a lot of things going on where, you know, I need to write emails and I need to be able to edit them and I need to be able to deal with calendars, multiple calendars, and that sort of stuff. And so that's sort of a situation in which a lot of people aren't in. And if they're not in that situation, and you know, don't need to have things done faster than not, the Android would be a fantastic possible solution. And so I guess in this go-around, I learned that for me, it may not be the best solution, which is very different than the former round where, you know, because a lot of things weren't accessible and it was really a challenge to find a lot of applications, it was sort of not a good option for me.
Well, I think that you're being very reasonable, and what you're saying makes a lot of sense to me. At the same time, though, I don't have an Android phone. I do have an Android tablet, a Nexus 7, and I have mostly been honestly comparing it to the iPad, which I also have. And I myself can't find any reason why I would rather spend the additional time and the additional effort that it takes to make this or that app give me the information that I need on the Android device when I can just pick up the iPad. The thing that I would think is if someone either can't afford an Apple device, because normally the Android devices are significantly less expensive, or if for some reason someone doesn't want to get involved in the Apple ecosystem, because in my experience at least, Apple works a whole lot better if you also have a Mac and an Apple router and an iPhone, and everything can integrate with iCloud. That is, you can sync your contacts, your calendars, your bookmarks, so forth. If you invest in that entire system, you have something that really works well. But if you have a mixture of a lot of different devices, I don't think the Apple system is nearly as powerful. And I suppose one could make the same argument if you invest heavily in the Google system with Android and use all the various Google apps, Google Now, use the Google syncing capabilities for calendars and bookmarks with Chrome and all that. I suppose one can make the same argument that that too makes for a more attractive package, but I don't have the experience of trying to integrate all the Google items.
Well, I think that the what you say is very, very true in that the Apple stuff is great if you have Apple stuff. There's ways to get around it. I know listeners are probably hearing this and saying, you know, that's ridiculous. I use my iPhone with my Windows machine and my Netgear router all the time, and it works great. It's true. It does work great. But the experience is really ideal if you have, you know, the iPhone, the Mac, and the AirPort router, and the AirPlay speakers. You know, all of the Apple-type stuff, it'll work better. It doesn't mean it won't work any other way, but it works better that way. With Android, though, it is very Google-centric, but it's also it uses a lot of protocols that are very open. So you can integrate Outlook with Google pretty easily, and you can integrate, you know, every phone type, even way back to Symbian, you could integrate with a lot of the Google services. And so it's different in that the ecosystem cares less about whether you're using an Android product. It simply works with Android the way it works with other stuff too. And so in that regard, it's a little bit easier, albeit a little bit less user-friendly, to get things sort of talking to one another and synced up and integrated. So that's... It is very true. It is, however, a challenge if you have, you know, the Apple ecosystem is a you know, pretty closed one in that, for example, I have music, what do they call it, iTunes Match, which is a service where you can upload your music into the cloud from iTunes and you can listen to it on your iPhone, your iPad, your iTunes, multiple computers, wherever you are, you can have your music. I love iTunes Match. I use it very heavily, and it was quite a reality check when the first day I went to work with my Android device, and I realized suddenly I have no access to any of my music, and I need to find some other way now to get all of my music out of the cloud and somehow synced onto the Android device. Same thing with iCal. But iCloud. Great if you have Apple, but very difficult, if not impossible, to access stuff that's synced within it from Android. And the other way, though, isn't necessarily true. Google services tend to be more open. So if you sync with Google stuff, likely you can sync whether you're using an Android, an iPhone, Windows Mobile, or any other thing out there.
So are you saying that you could switch your music over to some sort of, I assume they have one, Google Music service similar to iTunes Match, and then you could use that service with both your Android and your iPhone?
Absolutely. Google does have a thing called Google Music, which is something I didn't play with much. The one that I played with because I'd used it in the past was Amazon MP3. You can purchase music from them, or you can match your own songs into the Amazon cloud, and I think they give you even more storage than iCloud does. And the Amazon MP3 player is fully accessible on iOS, and it's fully accessible on Android. The interesting thing is on the Android, it actually allows you to buy tracks, whereas on iOS, the tracks already have to be in the cloud, so they don't, because they don't want to share any revenue with Apple. So it was interesting because there was more functionality in the Android version. But either way, my Amazon MP3 stuff worked just fine on iOS. It works fine on Android. Fully accessible on both platforms. There's ways, I understand, to get access to it from Windows, although I haven't quite gone down that path yet. So, you know, definitely a lot of options there that aren't necessarily technology specific.
Does it allow you to integrate your iTunes content into the Amazon Cloud Player as well?
It does. There is some sort of a match uploader thingy that you download, and it will run against your iTunes library. It looks at your tracks and does whatever magic it does and matches the ones that are there. It uploads the ones that are not. It crashed for me, and I think it was something weird with the way my setup is configured. I have my music on a drive connected to a wireless network with a weak signal, and I think at some point it just lost connectivity and broke down and melted. But yeah, theoretically, assuming it didn't do that, that's what should happen. The trick is that you have to play your music then through the Amazon MP3 player on iOS, because the built-in music player obviously won't be able to access that cloud storage. So it changes where you need to play it through, but you can still get access to everything.
So if you go about it that way, have you then lost iTunes Match as far as iCloud is concerned?
Nope, I've got them both.
You could play your music that way on an iOS device.
Yep, absolutely. Works very accessible. The only thing you can't do on the iOS device is if you're out and about and you hear a great new song and you think, I really want to buy that song, I want to own that song, with iTunes and iTunes Match, you can go in there with your iOS device and you can buy that track, right from the player. Because Apple requires in-app purchase proceeds to be shared with Apple, they don't allow that in the Amazon MP3 player. That is to say, Amazon isn't allowing it because they don't want to share that money with Apple. So if you hear that brand new song from whomever on the radio and you think, gee, I really want to buy that right now, you can't do that on iOS with Amazon's MP3 because they don't allow you to buy tracks from there. You have to buy them on the web or match them, through the upload process. You can't buy them from the player. With Android, though, you can. That option to purchase tracks it does exist right within the Amazon MP3 player because they don't have any sort of revenue sharing thing. So that's kind of a frustrating thing. It's just the fact that, if you went to buy something or match something before you left home and you didn't, you can't do it or buy it from on the road with iOS.
So if you buy it from Amazon MP3, is there some way then to get it into iOS so that you can have it put into iTunes Match?
Yes, you can. Not through the iOS device. What you need to do is download the music from the Amazon MP3 cloud. There's a way that you can log in, and you can choose to download either an individual track or a whole album. And you do that, and the downloader will, it has the option to automatically import the media into iTunes, or else you can just download it and then, manually import it if you prefer.
Right.
But they're all MP3 files, and they're all, pretty high bitrate. So you can do it. It's not difficult, although it certainly could be made a little bit easier.
Point is, the two systems, iCloud and Amazon MP3, don't integrate perfectly with one another. You can, sounds like, make it work, but it's a little bit of effort on the user's part.
Yeah, exactly. I think that the big draw, though, is with iTunes Match, you only can access it with an Apple device. That's it. And that's fine. Again, if you only have Apple devices, that's it's perfect. It's user friendly. It's seamless. It's easy to use. No problem at all. I'm definitely not canceling my subscription anytime soon. But with Android, and I think this is why I sort of veered off onto this, is that, you know, you have the ability with Android to use the Amazon MP3 one, for example, but it isn't unique to Android. It's not specific to Android. And that therein, I think, lies a big difference. There's a lot of Apple stuff out there, like iCloud, that works great, but it's only working if you have Apple stuff to work with it. If you don't, then it doesn't work at all. And with Android, a lot of the services that are available, whether it's a music matching service or whether it's, you know, a calendar syncing service or whatever, are things that work with Android but aren't unique to Android. They also work with non-Android stuff.
Playing the devil's advocate just for a moment, I hear what you're saying and I understand it and know that you're right. I do think, though, that Apple stuff works better as Apple stuff because it is restricted, because they make the hardware and the software and they tune it all to work together. Whereas, at least in my experience with Android, yes, maybe it's more open, maybe it works with more wider variety of services or devices, but none of those services or devices work quite as smoothly or quite as well, in my experience, again, as the Apple services with Apple devices. So I think you pay a bit of a price for that openness.
You do, exactly. And that comes down to the sort of the, I don't know what to call it, the efficiency factor, maybe? You know, again, do you have time to pay that price and to deal with that and, you know, to get up and running, to get things set up? I mean, it's not, you know, with Apple, it's just checking a checkbox oftentimes and that's it. I mean, it's very, very straightforward. And with Android, there's often a bit more configuration to make things work. And, you know, sometimes server addresses that you have to look up. I don't think I've ever entered a server address for an Apple thing anywhere, ever. It knows what I want to do. And so, you know, again, I think you're absolutely right. And from an efficiency, you know, perspective, you do have to ask yourself, you know, is it more important for me to have this open architecture that's free and not restricted to a specific technology, or do I just need to get something done, and do I need to be able to get it done quickly and not spend a lot of time figuring out, you know, how to do it and what's going to work and what I enter where and how to configure? And I think, you know, there are people who answer yes to both sides of that equation, and in a way I think that's sort of what defines the dividing line in part between those that really love Android and those that really love iOS. The Android crowd are the ones often saying, yes, I totally want to do that. I want to have control over the configuration and make sure it's an open architecture, and I want to do all this stuff. And the iOS crowd is saying, you know, yeah, that's all great, but I just don't want to check a checkbox and go on with my life, and I don't care how it works. I don't care you know, what goes on behind the scenes. I just want things to work and, you know, not to have to deal with it.
I tend to be one of those people who straddles the fence and uses both. I know for me, two areas in which Android shines more are the TTS. I love the Google British TTS, and in fact, just the sheer number of TTS options that you have on Android. You can get Evona voices, acapella voices. You're not restricted to just one company's TTS like you are with Apple and Nuance Vocalizer. And also for me, one of the things that has kept me kind of using my Nexus 7 more is the fact that right now I'm having a better experience with the Audible app. And I know, Robert, you said that you tended to have better experiences with the iPhone app, but for me, a book will download the entire book, not just a part or two, will download for me on my Android device, on my Nexus 7, even a huge book, a 40-hour book I downloaded the other week, less than 10 minutes. And on the iPhone app, I'm having a lot of trouble where one part will take maybe 20 minutes to download, and half the time I get a download corrupt error. So for me, in that instance, it's an issue of Android actually being just a little bit more efficient and quick. And I don't really know if that's my wireless connection or why that is.
See, I think that's fascinating because I don't have that experience. For me, I can tell either the iPhone Audible app or the iPad Audible app to download the entire book, and it does it very quickly. This morning I downloaded a 15-hour book, Whiskey Beach by Nora Roberts, and on the iPad, and it took less than 10 minutes to download, each part. And it did it all at once. I just told download the whole thing. And so I don't know whether it's because I'm using an Apple router or what makes the difference, but it's just fascinating that you're having such a different experience with the two devices. And it is true that the Android device does download the books quickly. But here's the thing for me with the Android device. Here's an issue, and maybe I just don't know how to use it correctly. But for me, I often need to pause my book. If someone walks in the room, or if someone calls me on the phone, or if I get interrupted somehow, I need to quickly pause my book. As far as I know, I have to actually locate the pause icon on the screen, on the Audible screen, and double tap on that to get the book to pause. With iOS, I can do a two-finger double tap anywhere on the screen and the book immediately pauses. And that to me makes a huge difference in terms of my convenience factor, in terms of my real usability of the Audible app. Now, am I missing something? Are there other ways to pause it? I haven't found them, if there are.
There really doesn't seem to be any other way to get around that particular issue. What I've done, though, is I have paired my Aftershocks Bluetooth headset, and thank you for that recommendation, with my Nexus 7, and the play pause button on the right hand side does work with it.
Okay, that's really ironic, because on the Audible app on iOS, the play pause button on the Aftershocks does not work.
I know.
And see, I find this absolutely fascinating. Just listening, to this dialogue is really what keeps me fired up about this, because for those that are listening hoping to find a clear winner in the Android iOS debate, I don't think there is one, and maybe no. I shouldn't say that quite yet, but it really depends how you use it. For example, I almost never use the two-finger double tap thing. I just don't. I usually use the button on my earbuds, or the pause play button is right above my home key. Does that mean I'm doing it wrong? I don't think so. I mean, the way that Robert's doing it is perfectly fine. It works for him. The way that I do it works for me. So for me, I would never have noticed what he mentioned, because I always look for that pause play button anyway, and so it never would have crossed my mind. The thing that Allison mentioned about the multiple voices being available on Android, I think that is neat. I think it's great that we can download all kinds of voices on Android, and you can even have different voices configured to speak different applications if you should want. You can have one voice reading GPS app and another voice reading something else. So, I mean, there's a lot of ability to customize there, which is neat, and it's fun, and some people absolutely love that or need that because certain voices sound better. And other people say, yeah, that's nice, it's cool, but I'm fine with Samantha on the iPhone. I'm used to her. And,
I hate her.
she may not be the best voice, but it's fine. I don't care about download all those voices and being able to do all that. I don't need that. For me, I mentioned earlier, it's the calendar and the email and just the efficiency of getting stuff done. And, other people say, my life isn't so busy, I can take an extra 10 seconds to send a text message or to send an email. Steve is just too too busy or too wound up or whatever insert your own word here. That doesn't apply to me. And that's I think what's fascinating about all of this is that there's so many different ways to do each thing, And it really is getting to a point where we, you know, we used to have a discussion about what phone you would get because there was only a couple that would work. And that's what your options were. And now we have discussions about, you know, what device works for me and works with the way that I work and the way that I want to do things. And we're starting to make decisions not strictly based on what accessible devices we might happen to have available, but on the same types of things that, you know, consumers make decisions on. It's the same way that my wife made a phone decision in part based on the camera quality. She's a big photographer person, nut, and takes pictures of the kids all the time and whatever. And for her, you know, having a decent camera on the phone was an important thing. I could care less. And so, you know, it's kind of interesting that we're able to now have these sorts of discussions and make the same, you know, the same decisions based on, you know, sort of with those same motivations. You know, what matters to me? Do I need a two-finger double tap to be able to quickly pause and restart my book because I, you know, I need that? Or, you know, do I need the ability to have different voices because maybe I have a hard time understanding Samantha, or I just can't stand her, you know, whatever the case is? Do, you know, am I have a really active work day and I'm going to use this in a work setting and I need my stuff to just work and I can't think about how it works in the background? You know, whatever your situation is, can really factor in. And anyway, I'll stop going on. I think it's absolutely fascinating to listen to you guys talk about this.
Well, I think you're making a great point, and I'd like to just add a couple things to that. One is that this isn't just about accessibility anymore. This is about preferences between operating systems. I know we talk a lot about accessibility, but Android and iOS are different even without the accessibility factor factored in. So you kind of have to decide which type you prefer, which approach to mobile computing do you prefer, and which ecosystem do you want to align yourself with, and that kind of thing. But one thing I did want to add also is that when I first started using Android on my Nexus 7, even a couple months ago, back in January, I thought it was going to be great to be able to download these different voices. But what I found at that time was that the only voice that really worked efficiently, at least in my way of operating, again, might be different from everybody else's, but in my way of working, the only one that was efficient for me was the default Google voice. Because if I tried the acapella voice, I discovered that when I opened up the screen that showed me my notifications, a lot of times Heather would start reading and there was no way to shut her up. You just couldn't stop her without somehow turning the device off or leaving the room until she got done or something. There was no way to make her stop once she got started. That issue did not occur with the default TTS. But for me, that was a showstopper, because I wasn't willing to put up with half the time Heather just being a runaway voice that I couldn't stop. Now, in the most recent version of TalkBack and in the most recent update to the acapella voices, Heather no longer has this problem. So between January and April, this problem has been fixed. And I see that as a real step forward for Android and TalkBack and acapella voices. But that wasn't true even as recent as January, at least not for me. So it was nice that there were choices, but the choices weren't very good because they didn't work very well.
Well, and that's the thing about this technology now. It's changing so rapidly that something that's a game changer, a showstopper now, may not exist a month from now.
Exactly. It's a moving target.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, on the one hand, the geek in me is excited that we don't have to wait for major Android releases to get things fixed. If the Heather people are able to rein Heather in a little bit and stop her from talking, they can just push out an update and be done with it. If TalkBack wants to make some sort of improvement to improve the browsing experience or whatever, they can just push out an update. Don't have to necessarily wait for major iOS updates or patches to make that happen. And with the the iOS platform, you do. I mean, the only time you get updates for accessibility are when there is an iOS update, you know, released to the general public. So you have to kind of wait for that.
Well, that's not quite true, because the a lot of times the app developers themselves do things to tweak accessibility that they can do from within their app.
From within the apps, yes, but I meant to the accessibility components directly, not apps, but like if there was a bug, for example, there used to be a bug where Samantha would cut off certain characters,
right.
And the only way they could fix it was when they released an iOS update, and so you had to sort of deal with it until the iOS update came out. Whereas with Android, theoretically, they could just push that update out anytime. The flip side, though, I think, is that on the iOS side, they get more time to really test it. And with Android, I think oftentimes they'll push something out, it doesn't work, so they'll push another thing out. That fixes the one thing but breaks something else, so now we got to push something else out. So it is very fast paced, it's very fast moving, but it's sort of a double-edged sword in a way. On the one hand, it's nice that they can be really responsive, and on the other side, the ability to be fast and responsive, I think, often leads to problems that they didn't foresee, or that, you know, they don't really realize until people have this in hand. And that Heather bug is a great example where they fixed it, but it makes me wonder, you know, now what's broken, or what's the next thing that you know, that they haven't figured out yet that they're going to have to push another update out for.
Right. Well, an example of that is in the latest version of TalkBack, they added a new feature, audio ducting, which lets you supposedly automatically reduce the volume of audio that's playing when TalkBack speaks. But immediately I discovered that completely breaks the pausing of the Audible app when you have audio ducting turned on. I must be hung up on pausing things. But anyway, pausing becomes completely unreliable in the Audible app. With this ducting feature turned on. And so, I mean, that's just an example of what you're saying. Yes, it's a nice feature, but it's not ready for prime time if you want to use it with the Audible app.
So again, I don't think it's better to, you know, take the iOS route where you wait until things have been really proven and are really stable. I mean, if you like to live on the bleeding edge, as it were, you know, that type of thing is a very boring thing. On the other hand, if you need things to work and you want to minimize bugs like that happening, and you're okay with the, you know, being a bit more patient and waiting for things to go through pretty rigorous testing and beta cycles and so forth, you know, iOS might earn that extra point right there, you know, because it'll give you that more than Android will. And so, again, it's another thing that, you know, again, really breaks down to what type of person are you, what type of level of risk, I don't want to say it that way, but I can't think of another word, you know, do you want to take on? Is it more important and neat for you? Are you jazzed up by, you know, sort of being on the edge and being able to try these things out and maybe give feedback when things like the pause issue come up, and you're willing to kind of risk maybe not being able to do something you used to be able to do, or do you not want to do that and you just need things to work and you don't necessarily need, you know, the new features every couple of weeks to be pushed out to you and that sort of thing?
I think that the three of us are examples who, and granted an N of three isn't a great statistical sampling, but I think the three of us could all agree that for us, we really need and want both. We want to experiment with Android and see what they're doing and how it's coming along and try these things out. We also want to work efficiently, and to do that, you need, at least I need, iOS. And so
exactly.
I need and want, I don't need both. I could live just fine, honestly, with either one. I would prefer to live with iOS if I only had one choice that I could make. But I want both because they're both interesting and appealing to me. But I would have to say, in all honesty, that at this point, I'm more disappointed in the gotchas with Android, then I am excited about the advancements that have been made that would make it equal to or better than iOS. I haven't really had that experience for me. I'm excited that it's improving. I'm excited that it's available for people who want it. But it's just not quite where I'd like to see it be yet. And I'm not sure whether it ever will be, because even though it's getting better, I think that Android it is at a real disadvantage having to support so many devices and having to make accessibility work across so many different phones and tablets and all that. I'm not sure that it ever will be as polished and efficient as iOS, but I don't think that's any different from people who don't use accessibility. They'll tell you the same thing. And so I think there's an underlying difference in the two operating systems that you have to consider.
Yep. Yeah, Android has no easy task, that's for sure. And I think it's further complicated by the fact that manufacturers are able to make modifications to the firmware that gets installed on their devices. For example, on my S3, which is a Samsung phone, so Android, the normal Android keyboard works kind of like the iOS one does, in that you can feel until you find a letter, and then you lift your finger up to enter the letter. However, Samsung decided to use a non-standard keyboard, and so the only way you could enter text on it is to double tap on each character, which for me was real confusing, because everything I was reading was telling me, you know, search till you find the letter, lift your finger, and it'll enter the letter. It wasn't happening, so I had to double tap on each character to enter it, and I was able to solve it by, you know, adding the Google keyboard instead of the default Samsung one, but nowhere was it written that I had to do that or should do that. And so it was very, you know, with iOS, you really do get a very polished experience. It works the same. However, my experience with my Samsung S3 with entering text was probably very different than yours on the Nexus, because the Nexus, you know, being a Google product, has the right keyboard. And so, you know, the TalkBack folks can't really account for all of those discrepancies, and there's so many, whether it's that or whether it's the dial pad, you know, that gets invoked if you're on a phone call and you want to enter, you know, numbers in to get through a menu system or something, to all kinds of apps, the home screen and things like that. So the level of accessibility out of the box varies so dramatically from one manufacturer to another, and even from one device to another. I'm told the S4 actually from Samsung does use the correct keyboard, whereas my S3 does not. So, I mean, it really just, you know, how to deal with that. I don't envy the accessibility folks at Android one bit, because there's just way too many variables to account for.
I know that for me personally, I'm going to be watching the emergence of iOS 7 and Android 5 with kind of equal excitement, because I think in terms of accessibility and just general usability, that users of both are going to be expecting a lot from each new version of each OS.
Yeah, I think that's very true, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. It looks like iOS 7 is rumored to have been delayed for a while, and I suspect it's undergoing quite a redesign, with Johnny Ives now taking over the design of the software as well as the hardware. And I'm imagining that it will be quite a bit simplified, and that's going to be interesting to see how that works.
I may reactivate my developer account.
I actually thought the same thing. Maybe I should reactivate my developer account. These are really exciting times, and yeah. I think I'm excited that, you know, we're able to look at, geez, what's new and coming in iOS 7 and Android 5, and that's so very different. I remember with back in the old Symbian days, way back when, the question that I used to have whenever Nokia would put out a new version of Symbian, you know, which wasn't frequently, but whenever they did, was, geez, how long before my screen reader is going to work with this?
Yep.
you know, and are they going to do it in less than a month this time, you know? And that was the big thing that everyone would wonder is, how long is it going to take? And now, you know, the whole focus has shifted. We're having these conversations of, you know, what is coming? What are we able to expect is going to come right at day one, on launch day, from these two operating systems? And that's, you know, a really fascinating and wonderful place to be. You know, I think it's real exciting. I can't wait to see what happens. I'm like, you know, like Robert, I'm excited to see what changes come in iOS 7 and to see how they simplify it. I mean, a little nervous, to be honest. I just, whenever they change an interface, I always get nervous. Am I going to find what I need? You know, and then later I think, oh, geez, I can't remember how we lived without this. So real excited about that. And, you know, Google has been putting a lot more resources onto Android accessibility. App developers are more aware that folks are using their apps with assistive technology. And so I think there is sort of a trend toward, you know, geez, is our app accessible? Can we make it accessible? You know, what do we need to do? And that's happening. I think it's a slow trend, but I think it can be called a trend at this point. And so I think, you know, all of that is going to make for some very exciting, you know, release days once these things are actually launched.
Yeah, I agree. It is exciting. And it's your point's a good one. We no longer have to wait for the screen reader to catch up to the launch of the new version. Now the screen readers work on day one. At least that's been the case up until this point. Hopefully, I'm assuming that will continue. And assuming that it does, that really makes it much more viable for us to be beta testers and early adopters and all that as people who are blind, because we can depend on the operating system working for us on the day that it's launched. And that, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about that, but that's really a big step forward.
Really is. Yeah, it is. And just, you know, the fact that we're having these conversations about, you know, which device works well for me, or which, you know, modality, Android or iOS, works with how I work. It's a very different conversation than, geez, I need to purchase this hardware because this is what my screen reader will work with. And so that's what's driving my hardware purchase and my decision to use an operating system, because this is what I'm able to use. And now it's, you know, what do I need? You know, it's just, it's really fascinating to me just to see how far we've come. And And just to look at some of these, I feel so old saying this, but to look at these kids, you know, who don't remember, you know, how it used to be, and this is the norm for them. And to think, you know, what are they going to think back at in 20, 30 years and think, oh, I remember when we had to wonder about, you know, what was coming in TalkBack and iOS, but now the big thing of the day is this in terms of accessibility, or, you know, what will it possibly be?
I guess they'll be thinking back to before the computer was actually implanted in their brain as a nanobot, right?
Exactly. Steve was complaining about the touchscreen. My gosh, I used to have to type back then.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I wanted to wrap up with see if you guys had any new and exciting either apps or pieces of hardware that you're currently excited about. And I'll start, because I just ordered something that I'm excited about that David Woodbridge podcasted about today. That man has cost me more money than almost anyone. I need to have him back on the podcast so we can debate that point. But at any rate, David just podcasted about a Logitech keyboard. It's a Bluetooth keyboard that's solar powered, and it's unique in that it allows you to switch between three Bluetooth devices. You can have three Bluetooth devices paired and just press the F1, F2, or F3 function keys to switch between them. So for those who have an Android device, an Apple device, or two, and they all use a Bluetooth keyboard, you can use one keyboard to switch between them. And so, of course, I had to buy one of these things. It's the, I believe it's the Logitech K760. It is an interesting, geeky device that apparently is out, and you can get it on Amazon for around $60 plus shipping and tax and all that.
I've been thinking about checking that out.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, David.
Thank you, David. I'll send you the bill.
Yes. He's, I think he's responsible for me spending a lot of my money too. But when I heard this, I thought, you know, I do need this because I constantly am just pairing my keyboards with multiple devices. And, I thought, wow, I could do this with one keyboard and just switch between them. This is just beautiful. So, yeah, I hadn't looked at the price yet, but I suspect I might be placing an order for one of those as well.
Yeah, I just ordered it. But there's also a really nice app for the Mac now that lets you use the Mac as your Bluetooth keyboard for your devices called Type to Phone, and it works really well, and it's only a few dollars. In fact, for recent times, there have been days when it's been free, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great app, too. Type to Phone, and there's iKeyboard, which is another one. It has less functionality than Type to Phone. I think it used to be less money, but, of course, now that Type to Phone is free, it's a little bit of a moot point. It's a great app. I use it a lot, and if you have a Bluetooth thing, it's a great way to use your Mac and switch between using your keyboard on your Mac for your Mac or for that device. And it even has in one of the pull down menus keyboard shortcuts that, you know, you can choose if you just are too lazy to enter them yourself. And they actually have a whole section for voiceover keystrokes in the pull down menus of Type to Phone. So if you need a cheat sheet, it's right there. It can't be any simpler.
Yes, and you can actually use keyboard mapping to map those shortcuts to hotkeys. Yes, and so it makes it very convenient to use. For example, you can I mapped the double tap key to Command O, and I mapped the home key to Command H, and so it's really cool. You can really be very efficient using Type to Phone with your devices that way. In fact, I used Type to Phone, ironically enough, with my iPad to order the Logitech keyboard.
Nice. Now, are you going to use your Logitech keyboard to connect to your Mac and then use that to talk to your iPad? That would kind of be the most circuitous thing, but I have to say it would be really neat if you could do it.
Probably could, but I don't even think I will get quite that geeky with it. I think I'll use them more in the traditional sense. And I just love the fact that it's solar powered and that, that, you know, it lets you switch between multiple devices. I really want to use it with my Apple TV, probably my iPad, and maybe my wife's iPad, because those are the ones that we always have in the living room. And it's just nice to have a keyboard that's handy to control all those devices. Either you all have other exciting hardware, software that you're playing with at the moment?
Well, I know I'm a tad late to the party, but I have recently discovered the Aftershocks Blues bone conduction headset, and it's kind of changed my life.
Wow, that's an endorsement.
Yeah. The one thing that I wish it did, though, was I wish it had one, like a multi-switch so that I could just pair it with multiple devices. As it is now, I have to turn Bluetooth off on one device and then pair it with the other. And it's a little bit cumbersome if you're trying to use it with multiple devices. And the only thing that I find that it doesn't work well for is music listening. It's not very a very bass-heavy headset. But for podcasts and audiobooks, it's just amazing that I can walk around the house and do what I need to do and take phone calls when I need to. I've tried several different Bluetooth headsets, and they were either too difficult to pair or repair, or they weren't comfortable. This is easy to pair, and it's comfortable, so it's just fabulous.
I agree. I love the Aftershocks Blues. They not only does it work well, and you're right, I don't like them with music either, but if you listen to a lot of podcasts or a lot of audio, they sound great, and they're quite efficient. I'm surprised at how much volume they have.
I'm surprised by the volume and the battery life I can get, especially if I'm not talking on the phone. I mean, I can get a couple of days, sometimes a day or two, even at least, out of them before I have to charge them, depending on how consistently I use them throughout the day.
Yeah, they advertise 6 hours of battery life for the Bluetooth version and 12 for the wired version, but I think the Bluetooth version gets at least 6 hours.
At least, if not more.
I have to see these. I keep hearing good things about them, and I when I first heard about them, I was skeptical. I thought, you know, that's got to be, I mean, the idea of not having something covering my ears was certainly appealing, but I thought, no, it can't really work as good as they say, and people seem to really like them. I'd love to see these things somewhere.
Yeah, it would be great if you could see them, because I like them, and Allison likes them a lot, and I've heard other people say that. But my son tried them, and he's actually really only into listening to music, which they're not as good for in terms of music listening. But he tried them, and he didn't like them. He said they really made his cheekbones vibrate. I don't have that sensation when I use them.
No, neither do I.
But he didn't like them. So that's the problem with headphones. I bought so many headphones through mail order, you know, that when I got them, for whatever reason, they didn't suit me as well. They didn't live up to what I'd hoped they would do. And if there was some way to see them, that would be ideal, because then you'd know whether you liked them for you or not. Anything you're working with, Steve, that's exciting that you want to mention that you haven't mentioned already at this point?
One of the things that I liked on Android was the Go Read app. I liked it for reading novels. It didn't give me as much navigation as I would like, and, you know, for reference books, but for novels it's great. And when I switch back to using iOS, there's Read to Go, but sometimes it would crash when I'm changing between chapters, and I found it really frustrating. I wasn't really happy with it. And so someone had mentioned on Twitter, Voice Dream, is an app that costs, I think it's $10, and basically it can use multiple voices. It comes with Heather, but you can purchase additional voices. And the nice thing about Voice Dream is that it plays multiple file formats, including Bookshare files, which you can download directly. It plays doc files, plays PowerPoint, if there's text in the PowerPoint, PDF, and a myriad of other formats. And the neat thing with Voice Dream is that it can get files in a number of ways. You can access them from Dropbox, which is neat. It can connect to your Dropbox account, and so you can put files into Dropbox that you want it to get, and it can download those. It does have the ability to log directly into Bookshare. So if you're a Bookshare person, you can do searches on Bookshare and download content directly into the app. It integrates with Gutenberg and a bunch of other stuff. But anyway, what's neat about it is it is just like an audio player. You can rewind the book, play it, fast-forward it. It does have some navigation. It has a clearer sounding, well, I guess Read to Go has Heather as well, but it has multiple voices that you can purchase. So if you're reading books in other languages and you need to have a different language voice installed, you can do that as well and then switch between them. It's got a wide selection of voices. So anyway, it was a little pricey for an app, I think, but I have to say it's probably the best $10 I've spent in a while. I really enjoy it, and I'm finding that I'm now using it to read other stuff, you know, Word docs and things that I just, you know, haven't had a chance to read at my desk or whatever. I just throw them into Dropbox and pull them into the app and read them on there. So real excited about Voice Dream.
I think it's worth every penny.
Yeah, I have it as well and really enjoy it. And I think there are 21 or 23 English language voices you can choose from. There's a huge number of them. And I recently purchased the British Bridget voice, and I've grown quite fond of Bridget. The nice thing about it too is you can actually sample all those voices. So you can try them out before you buy one.
And they're cheap. I mean, the voices are like $2.99 or $3.99. They're under $5. So I know people are often wondering, you know, geez, is it going to cost more for the voices than the app? They're not. They're pretty inexpensive. So, yeah, you can sample them. And if you like them, you can get it. It's very, very handy. I like the fact that it's one interface. I think you can do the same things with multiple apps, but I just really like having it all in one place. You can also group things into collections, and there's all sorts of stuff you can do.
You can, and you can also, if you choose to, read the text using VoiceOver. There are tons of new things going on. I know you've been experimenting, Allison, with some of the apps that will take pictures and identify things, and we can probably do a whole show on those because there seem to be a bunch of those coming along. But I mean, again, like we were saying, with the whole iOS Android idea, there's so much new stuff and exciting stuff that it's even hard to keep up these days. But it's
it
so,
really is, isn't it?
It is. It's so much fun, though.
It's great.
Being a person who tries to keep up with what's going on, I find that I am having to listen to dozens of podcasts every week and read RSS feeds. And I could almost, if I didn't have to pay the bills, I could almost turn my full-time life into keeping up with the technology.
But easily.
It's too bad no one seems to want to pay me to do that.
Yeah, really. Wouldn't that be ideal?
Yes.
That would be wonderful. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it is exciting, and I'm really glad that we were able to have this discussion about iOS and Android, because it feels to me like we didn't have to say one is better than the other, or people don't have to make a choice based on one factor. There are so many factors to consider, and clearly, I imagine in some people's minds, we probably have maybe raised more questions than we offered answers. But it feels to me like at the very least, we've given people some things to think about. And that's kind of what I was hoping to accomplish here. So thank you for being here, Steve.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it has been a pleasure, and we'll have to do it again. We need to have you here more often, because I always enjoy hearing what you have to say. So thanks for doing it.
Well, thank you.
This is Robert, the Tech Doctor, and I'll say so long for now.
Bye, everyone.